Welcome to the Job Pod with your host, Elijah. Jobs, careers, and everything in between. Conversations with experts from searching to success.
Jennifer, thanks for joining the Job Pod. Very much appreciated. And as we were chatting before, it seems like you really enjoy LinkedIn. Totally different vibe than most social platforms. And hope you've been digging the energy and the positivity and people helping you out.
Yeah, I definitely have found a space on LinkedIn. Of course, there's all kinds of turmoil with Twitter now. I was previously just on Twitter for the most part. And then early in this year, I decided to join LinkedIn in January and really explore the platform because I'd read a lot about its growth and its changing. And I've really found it to be a very helpful platform for me personally to learn a lot about other things going on in the world, both in my industry of education, but also just to learn about other people's industries and perspectives. It's been really an interesting journey to explore LinkedIn.
And you found yourself as an educator, inventor, a writer, to share so many thoughts on LinkedIn.
I am an innovator in the sense that I create new programs, innovative programs in education. And I always have ideas that rock the boat and try to change and rethink and reimagine how we do things. And so I would say, yes, many people are receptive to my ideas, but many people are also not receptive to my ideas. I found on LinkedIn, it's a very, it's a growth-oriented platform. So I think most of the people on LinkedIn are very receptive to my ideas for innovation and change. And that's one reason I enjoy being on the platform. But I would say out in the real world, not everyone is ready for change in general or change in education.
Feel like you're teasing me a bit. Is there one that you can share off top of your mind that really rocked the boat and maybe freaked people out in a good way?
Yeah, so I've read a lot about the metaverse. And so I follow a lot of people on LinkedIn that post a lot of the new innovations about the metaverse. And so I wrote a blog. I also write on the Medium platform. I wrote a blog questioning, is the metaverse the answer to our teacher shortage? Meaning, well, maybe the metaverse is going to take over education and we could use it to solve the teacher shortage because people will be interacting online. And I think, and that rocked the boat, no doubt. Certainly because people are afraid of the metaverse. People are afraid of losing in-person teaching and what we, and status quo, tradition of education. And it's not that I'm necessarily advocating for that, but I'm questioning. A lot of my writing is questioning and wondering how to do things in a better way.
You're like a scientific teacher, educator, where you have these thought exercises. And there's the only thing I can think of off the top of my head is scientists. They always have these thought-provoking questions to really challenge the normal ideologies that we have. And why can't we think about all these crazy things? Because we have a problem with the teacher shortage. There's a lot of people that are burned out and bless their hearts for trying, but you know, there's got to be another way. And why not just think of something radical and maybe we can come into the middle, compromise, something like that.
Yeah. So I think my two things, one, I grew up with two educators as parents. And so they were always coming at issues with questions and encouraging me to question and learn to think through questioning. And also, I have been a middle school teacher for about 25 years. And I can tell you in the middle school classroom, that's ages, you know, I know people from all over might be listening to this. So that's ages 10 to 14. And in that realm, there are lots of crazy ideas that come from conversation. And also as a teacher, I have to come up with questions to engage my students.
Oh man, preteens. Good for you. Yeah. You must be resilient to the core. That's tough age, but good for you. So when you were in grade three, though, your mom threw or put a journal in front of you, said, start writing, picked up the pen, went for it. Do you grade three is a tough time to remember because I know being 40 plus, that's many years ago for me. Do you remember a bit about first impressions, what it felt like or what you thought it felt like to be told you need to start writing?
Oh,
and
yeah.
And what happened from there?
Certainly. I was angry. I think that's why I remember it. I remember the moment I was angry. I didn't want to have to be told to do this. And certainly not write every day. My father was a history professor. And so he really valued, primary sources and recording things for the future, right? So we can reflect and learn from that. And my mother was an elementary school teacher, and she every day was looking to build our skill sets, whether it is grammar at the dinner table and how you're speaking or writing. And so at first I was really angry because I saw this as their influence upon me. But once I saw it was, I took ownership of it and I saw this was my book and I could write whatever I wanted to, the doors really just opened. And I think my first journal entry says, I'm just writing this because my mother's making me. And so that just sort of opened the door for me to be able to express my thoughts and feelings and ideas. And I never stopped. I still do a journal to this day. And I really do think that is the one feature that has developed my not only my writing skills, but my thought skills. It's helped me. Sometimes I just write questions. Sometimes I have answers, but it helps me to process ideas.
Does that lean into your competitiveness as a swimmer at all? How you just don't like to put things down?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it does. So around the same time, a little bit before I started writing, my parents put me in competitive swimming. My brother was a competitive swimmer. And as the younger child, I had to follow suit. And I think I learned from swimming. I developed a drive in swimming that had an effect in other areas of my life, including the writing. So swimming forces you to be disciplined. If you're a competitive swimmer, you usually, even at age 7, I was swimming an hour and a half, 5 days a week. When I got to the college level, I was swimming for a couple months, 4 hours a day, 5 days a week. So there are many days when I didn't want to show up. Many days when I didn't feel like I wanted to do this. But I would show up and I would recognize the growth and development and progress from showing up. And I think that has filtered into all other areas of my life, including the writing. There are many days where I don't want to write. I don't want to write a blog. I don't want to consider writing in my journal because I'm also a teacher, right? And my day is very hectic. But I force myself to show up, and I'm very disciplined in the process. And I know I learned from swimming that if I am disciplined, there is an end result. Swimming is a very competitive sport in terms of competing with yourself, not just other people. But in swimming, you're often competing against your previous self. For example, it's measured in time, right? Your result and your progress is measured in how fast you are. And so if I swim 1 second faster, I have made progress. I have, I've hit my goal. And so I learned that it's just within me this drive to compete with myself to improve and grow and hit targets.
What was the target that you couldn't hit? Drove you nuts? Did you ever set one too far beyond your limits? Or did you always go for, okay, I'm going to hit 2 minutes and 500 meters. I'm sorry, whatever that may be in Imperial. I haven't had time to do the math, but since you're an educator, I'm hoping you can. And that's kind of my limit, right? So I'm just curious, did you set a time? Did it bug you? Are you always pushing for something a little better? Shave those milliseconds.
Yeah, so I never give up. So I think, I mean, I do give up on things when it makes sense to. But there are goals that I set for myself that are out of bounds. But I'm also realistic in the sense that, like, for example, if I set a goal to be a professional basketball player, I know that's not going to happen because I'm terrible at it and I'm 5 feet tall. But I set goals. For example, one of my goals this year was to publish a book. I didn't know what that book was going to be about. I didn't know what that book, you know, how it would come to fruition, but that was one of my goals. In swimming, 15 years of competitive swimming, there were many goals that I didn't, you know, many targets over the years that I didn't hit, whether it's in an individual meet or, for the season, particularly in college. There were a lot of really fast times that I wanted to hit that I did not hit. But what I found is when you have 15 years of setting targets and sometimes hitting them and sometimes not and building progress, you also develop another really important skill set of resilience. Hmm. And I found that, oh, yes, you can miss something and be unhappy about it, but it also gives you drive for your next goal, for your next target. And it can give you motivation for other things.
Did you set any lofty goals for a book you've just published on Amazon from the ground up?
Well,
just let it come to you.
I did not set any lofty goals about, so I knew I wanted to write a book when I finally figured out the idea that I was going to follow. I didn't set any goals on how long it would be or, you know, when it would be published. I did set a goal. I wanted it to be published by the end of October, and I hit that goal. I started it in July. But every day I spent grinding for an hour on it. That piece where you just show up and you write. So my goals were more daily goals and then a weekly goal. But the big target was actually publishing the book. And, I succeeded in that. I finished it.
Awesome. Well done. Is there 10 steps to publishing the book on Amazon, or is that only 10 steps to designing innovative programs? They follow the same process? 10 easy steps to publishing on Amazon, right? Maybe that's a new book.
That's a new, that you just gave me a new idea, right?
Good.
That's a great book. Amazon, I have to say, makes it very easy to publish your book. I think we tend to overthink a goal like publishing a book. We tend to overthink that it's overwhelming. We're all, you know, I think maybe our target would be a Tolstoy book, right? But that wasn't my target. So Amazon makes it very easy. All you have to do is have your draft. And so I spent probably an hour a day on my draft. And then I like Google Docs for writing, but it's easier to transfer into the Amazon platform with a Word document. Hmm. So I transfer my draft into a Microsoft Word document. And really, all you have to do is download the Kindle Create software, and it does all the transformation for you. Whoa. And if you organize it properly, it automatically puts the chapters in for you. It automatically puts an introduction in for you. It automatically puts an about the author page in for you. And then you just upload it.
That's great for a digital version, but what about the paperback? Do you have to upload a book?
This is really interesting too. So they also offer the cover, which you can, and I am not a graphic designer. They have, okay. So there are two different programs that I like for a cover. One is Canva. It has great, you just say book cover and all these templates come up and you can use them. But Amazon has templates that you can use for the cover as well. And so I decided I wanted to do the digital, but then I decided, you know what? I want a paperback copy of this book. I want to hold it. I want to open the pages. And all you have to do is upload the same material and click paperback. And so then it ships to you. You can purchase author copies, which are at a discount. So how Amazon works is if you would like to offer, say, a Kindle version, you can upload the information, you know, create your book, and it's done. And anybody can download it on Kindle Unlimited if you just check the box. Then if you want a paperback version to offer, you can just create that, upload it, same material. And then Amazon will print single copies to send to people. And so, of course, that is more expensive than printing, you know, like publishers do, 500,000 copies. Mm. But it's another option. And there are people who prefer physical books and prefer to read physical books. And it's really neat that you're just able to put it on there and somebody could pay to have the paperback. And I think when you go on Amazon and you see the two choices in any book you see, you will see that the paperback a lot of times is far more expensive. And that's the reason, because they are printing single copies just for you when you order it.
Wow. So if you don't have the overhead or that capital to go to a traditional, if I may say, publisher, mm-hmm. to get the 500,000 copies, then this is a great way to start. They yeah. just print on demand and nobody's out, I guess you could say, or inconvenienced. And it seems like it's similar. You just order on Amazon, send it to your address, and off you go.
Yeah, exactly. And then I chose to have my book on Kindle Unlimited. And so anyone who wants to read it on Kindle Unlimited, it's $0. I still get a percentage of what Amazon gets from that. Okay. But for people who just want to do that, it's an easy feature. But yeah, there's no, for me as an author, there was no overhead except time that I put into this.
And you're okay with making less than you would with the traditional, but you don't have to put out that space and time and money.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And I think too, so Amazon offers a pretty good percentage for those who write books in comparison to a traditional publisher. And you can select different tiers of a percentage that you would like to receive. And then they advertise it in different ways on Amazon for you.
Neat. I thought this would be fairly complicated. And I know a lot of people don't love Amazon because it's not local, et cetera, et cetera. But there are some benefits to going through bigger companies that kind of do all the magic for you.
Yeah. So here's the other interesting thing. I totally agree with you. Although I do buy a lot of things on Amazon, I am a fan of Barnes & Noble and going to a bookstore and just, you know, walking through and seeing books and exploring them. They also offer, if you would like, they will put your book up for sale in other bookstores. You get less of a percentage for sale for that. So it does cost you a little bit. But if I wanted to have my book published and sent to Barnes and Noble or offered on their system, I could do that. So it's not as limiting as you might think.
I have chapters, would be the Canadian equivalent to Barnes and Nobles, and it's a book reader's haven. So it probably, that's what I'm picturing too. That'd be really neat. You make a lot less or a little bit less, but I mean, you get that exposure for your first book.
Exactly.
It might be worth it to you.
Yeah, you do get the exposure. That's a very good point. And I think too, with Amazon versus say, if I had gone with a traditional publisher, in my work, if I select it, is can be purchased worldwide.
Right.
Which if you're a first time writer, that's really a neat benefit.
I can still get the paperback. You don't have to ship it across the border, and we don't have to meet at the U.S.-Canadian border.
Yeah.
That's especially in the winter time when everybody's complaining about snow and cold.
Yeah.
It'd be pretty good. That's neat. I didn't expect it to be like, I don't want to say it's like dead easy, but I mean, yeah, it really made the process less stressful for you.
Oh, it's great. It is. It is very easy.
Why should people pick up From the Ground Up? Just because Jennifer thinks it's awesome? Or is there big benefits for educators to help them innovate in the schoolroom?
Yeah, so that's a great question. The idea was born from some innovations that I have done over my career. We are in a time and a space where I think many people are realizing post-pandemic that the traditional education system is not working for us. You have teachers resigning, they're tired, they're fed up, and you have kids who have been learning in a different way for, you know, 2 or 3 years here, sometimes online and sometimes at a distance, 6 feet apart in the classroom with a mask. And then we also have this huge technological shift with social media and the metaverse opening up. There are a lot of colleges that are actually using the metaverse as a secondary platform for their campus. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote the book for educators and teachers like myself who recognize this is a moment in time where we're on the verge of a transformational shift in education and who want to start to initiate change in their school. And it can be small change, but they don't know how to begin. They don't know where to begin. I've initiated change several times, and the first time I did it, of course, it wasn't in a methodical way. I just thought everybody should agree with me and follow my idea. And that obviously didn't work. I was a young, 27-year-old who just wanted to come in guns blazing and change everything. And I found very quickly that didn't work with those who had been in the school for a while. And so over time, I learned a process and developed a process for bringing ideas to the forefront and developing them and getting approval for them and rolling them out. And so that's essentially what my book is. And I hope that it will inspire educators or give them a path to change, who are choosing to stay in the profession, will give them a path to make small incremental changes that could lead to very big change and very big shifts in the education industry. So I would say the reason to pick up my book is if you want to be inspired, or if you have an idea to change education, or if you have a teacher in your household who's constantly complaining, this is the book to give them to take steps forward.
Jobs, careers, and everything in between. Conversations with experts from searching to success.